Welcome back to the Deep Dives, where we do a deep dive.
Into the good stuff.
Yeah, you got it into the heart of a legal case. And this time...
It's a fascinating one.
It is. It's Hudgins v. NLRB.
From 1976.
A Supreme Court case that really just gets to the heart of, like, where do free speech rights and workers' rights kind of bump up against each other in this very specific location, the shopping mall?
Yeah, so... This case really kind of forces us to confront this question, you know, are privately owned shopping malls subject to those same First Amendment protections that we think of when we talk about, you know, a public park or a street corner?
Yeah, because like you go to the mall, you just assume it's public, but legally speaking.
Not so simple.
Not so clear cut.
Yeah.
So walk us through, like, what happened? What brought this case to the Supreme Court?
Okay, so it all started with a group of warehouse workers down in Georgia.
Okay.
They were employed by the Butler Shoe Company. And they went on strike over contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to take their protests to a Butler shoe store. Not just any store, though. Yeah. This particular store was located inside the North DeKalb Shopping Center, a privately owned mall.
Oh, so that's where the private property thing comes into play. So did the mall just let them protest?
Well, not exactly, too. The mall owner, a man named Scott Hudgins, he wasn't too thrilled about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
He saw this picketing as a disruption to his business and threatened those workers with trespassing charges.
Wow. Okay. So like a real showdown brewing here. We've got workers exercising what they believe is their right to protest.
Yep.
And then we've got the property owner saying, hey, this is my property. You're out here. What happened next?
So this clash of, you know, these interests sent the case all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Of course it did.
And the workers argued that their picketing, you know, should be protected by the First Amendment that guarantees freedom of speech.
Makes sense. But what was the mall owner's counter argument?
Well, Hudgins, he argued that his private property rights, you know, they just superseded those freedoms. And this is where it gets interesting, because the First Amendment, you know, mainly restricts the government's ability to limit speech.
Right.
Not necessarily private individuals or entities.
Okay, so the court had to figure out, is a privately owned shopping mall more like a, you know, like a traditional public space where we'd say, yeah, free speech should be protected, or is it more like somebody's, you know, house where they get to decide who comes and goes?
You got it.
Oh man, what a question. And had the court dealt with this kind of issue before?
They had, and that's what made this case even more complex, because there were these previous rulings, like Logan Valley Plaza,
okay,
which seemed to suggest that picketing in a shopping mall could be protected.
Huh.
But then you have another case, Lloyd Corp, which restricted such activities.
Yeah.
So the court was really trying to, you know, reconcile these seemingly contradictory precedents.
So the stage is set. We've got this legal battle going on. We've got these precedents that don't quite line up.
Yeah.
So which way did the Supreme Court go? Did they side with the worker's right to protest or the property owner's right to control his mall?
Well, in a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court ultimately sided with Hudgins, the mall owner.
Wow.
They ruled that the First Amendment didn't apply in this case.
Interesting.
And they said that this was purely a matter for the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA.
So no sweeping pronouncements about free speech in malls. It's more like, hey, this is a labor dispute, and here's a law that governs it.
Exactly. The NLRA is this federal law that protects employees' rights to organize, join unions, and engage in collective bargaining.
Okay.
And that includes activities like strikes and picketing. And the court basically said that the NLRA, you know, that provides a framework for resolving these kinds of disputes.
Okay.
And it aims to balance those rights of workers to picket with the rights of property owners.
So instead of a broad First Amendment issue, it became this much more specific question of, okay, how do we apply the NLRA in this very specific situation?
Precisely. And that's why Hudgins is considered such a landmark case in labor law.
It seems like it.
Because it establishes that the NLRA, not the Constitution, is the primary legal battleground for these types of disputes.
So, big takeaway for anyone involved in labor organizing, they really need to understand the ins and outs of the NLRA, because that's the law that's going to determine what they can and can't do when it comes to things like picketing.
You got it.
So the court basically said to unions, all right, if you want to picket, got to play with the NLRA's rules. That must have been a curveball for them.
It definitely made things a little more complicated. You know, before Hudgins, unions could argue that picketing was, you know, free speech protected by the Constitution. But after Hudgins, it was all about the NLRA, and that requires a much more nuanced approach.
So it's not just, can we legally picket here? It's more like, how can we picket here in a way that doesn't step on the property owner's toes.
Exactly. It's all about finding that balance between the rights of workers and the rights of property owners.
Okay. But before we get too deep into that, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, that the court's ruling in Hudgens wasn't like a total shutdown for picketing in malls.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's still some wiggle room.
Right. It didn't create a blanket ban on all picketing or protests. It simply shifted the focus to the NLRA.
So it's not a yes or no answer. It's a, well, it depends.
It depends.
On what are the factors that come into play?
Well, that's where the NLRA comes in, the National Labor Relations Board. They've developed what they call an accommodation test.
Okay.
And they use this to kind of evaluate these situations. They look at things like the location of the picketing.
Okay.
Is it blocking entrances or disrupting traffic? They consider the nature of the message.
Mm-hmm.
Is it directed at the specific business or is it more general? And they also look at whether the union has, you know, made reasonable efforts to minimize any disruptions or conflicts.
So there are some rules of the road, so to speak.
Exactly. The NLRB is kind of like a referee trying to make sure everyone's rights are being respected.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm starting to see how Hudgens v. NLRB is more than just a historical legal case. It's like a living precedent that's still shaping how labor disputes are handled today.
Absolutely. And for lawyers who specialize in this area, Hudgens is a must-know case.
Speaking of lawyers, I'm curious, how do attorneys actually use this case when they're advising clients? Is it just a matter of citing the precedent?
It's more than just citing the case. It's about really understanding the nuances of the ruling, knowing how to apply that NLRA accommodation test that we talked about to very specific situations. And it's about developing strategies that are both legally sound and effective.
So it's not just about winning the case. It's about finding solutions that work for everybody involved.
Right.
That's a lot to juggle. I bet labor law is a pretty challenging field.
It can be, but that's also what makes it so rewarding. You know, you're dealing with real people, real problems, and you have the chance to really make a difference in their lives.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the majority opinion, but what about the dissenting voices? Were there any justices who disagreed with the outcome?
Oh, yeah. The dissents are always important to consider, especially in a case as complex as Hudgens.
So in this case, who were the dissenters and what were their main arguments?
Well, the primary dissent came from Justice Thurgood Marshall.
Oh, wow. Justice Marshall? Of course, a giant in legal history. I can only imagine what his perspective was.
Yeah, well, he argued that, you know, shopping malls, they've become the modern day equivalent of public forums.
Okay.
Like they've replaced those traditional public spaces like streets and parks as the main gathering places for communities.
So he's saying that the definition of public space has kind of evolved and the law needs to catch up.
Exactly. And he felt very strongly that the First Amendment's protection of free speech should extend to these new forms of public space, including shopping malls.
So to him, the mall owner in this case was almost acting like a mini government restricting speech in a space that was, for all practical purposes, a public forum.
You got it. He believed that if we really value free speech, we have to protect it wherever people gather, whether it's a street corner or a shopping mall.
That's a powerful argument.
Yeah.
Did any other justices offer a dissenting opinion or maybe a concurrence?
Yes. Justice Byron White, while he agreed with the majority's outcome, he raised this really interesting hypothetical question.
I'm gonna love a good hypothetical. What was it?
He wondered if the outcome might have been different if the workers had been picketing right in front of the Butler Shoe Store where they actually worked, you know, instead of a separate warehouse.
So he's drawing a distinction between protesting a general labor practice versus protesting something directly related to the business where the picketing is taking place.
Exactly. Justice White seemed to be suggesting that if the workers had been protesting something happening at that specific store, you know, rather than at a warehouse, the NLRB might have been more likely to allow the picketing.
So even though he agreed with the majority, Justice White's concurrence suggests that there are still scenarios where picketing in a mall could be allowed under the NLRA.
Mm-hmm.
This is also nuanced.
It is. And that's what makes Hudgens v. NLRB such a fascinating and important case. You know, it doesn't give us easy answers.
Right.
It's a legal puzzle that requires careful analysis, thoughtful interpretation, and a deep understanding of both labor rights and property rights.
And it's a puzzle that's still being pieced together today as, you know, the worlds of work and commerce keep changing. I think we've done a good job covering the court's decision, but what about the lasting impact of this case? How has Hudgens shaped the legal landscape in the years since the ruling?
Well, that's where things get even more interesting, because the legacy of Hudgens extends far beyond just the facts of this case.
I bet.
It's had a profound impact on how we think about labor law, free speech, and the very nature of public and private spaces.
Okay, wow. Sounds like we've got a lot more to unpack. Before we jump into that, though, let's take a second to just kind of reflect on everything we've discussed so far. I said we've really gone deep on the court's decision and all the angles.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
But it's been so interesting.
It really highlights some fundamental tensions in our legal system.
Exactly. Like, how do we balance individual rights with, you know, the rights of property owners or the needs of society as a whole? It's something we're always grappling with.
And that's why cases like Hudgens are so important. They force us to really confront these tough questions.
Absolutely. So speaking of important questions, let's talk about the legacy of Hudgens v. NLRB. How has this case continued to shape the legal landscape, you know, in the years since the ruling?
Well, one of the biggest immediate impacts was a shift in strategy for labor unions after Hudgens. They couldn't just rely on the First Amendment to protect their picketing activities anymore.
Right. They had to start thinking within the framework of the NLRA.
Exactly. And that meant, you know, really understanding the nuances of the law and making sure they were complying with all the rules and regulations.
Oh, it wasn't just about, you know, can we picket here? It was more about how can we picket here in a way that's legally sound and strategically effective?
Right. And that gave the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, a lot more authority in this area.
So the NLRB essentially became the referee in these kinds of disputes.
Yeah, they were tasked with, you know, figuring out where that balance lies between the rights of workers and the rights of employers.
And that's led to a whole body of case law that tries to, you know, apply the principles of Hudgens to all sorts of different situations.
Right, it's not just about traditional picket lines anymore. We're talking about all kinds of activities that could be considered protected, concerted activity under the NLRA.
So the legacy of Hudgens is still evolving?
Absolutely. It's a living precedent that's constantly being reinterpreted and applied to new situations.
And I imagine it's a case that's going to become even more relevant as the nature of work continues to change, you know, with the rise of the gig economy and online platforms.
Oh, absolutely. All those new ways of working have raised all sorts of questions about how traditional labor laws apply in the digital age, and Hudgens is often cited as a starting point for those discussions.
Wow. So a case from 1976 about picketing in a shopping mall is now being used to grapple with the complexities of the internet age. That's pretty remarkable.
It is. It really shows how legal precedents can have these ripple effects that extend far beyond their original context.
So as we wrap up today, what are some key takeaways from Hudgens that our listeners can apply to their own lives?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is that the right to protest and engage in collective action, it's not absolute. It's a right that has to be exercised responsibly.
With respect for the rights of others.
Exactly. And those limits are often defined by the NLRA, which, as we've discussed, is all about finding that balance between competing interests.
So if you're thinking about organizing a protest or, you know, engaging in any kind of labor action, it's crucial to understand your rights and responsibilities under the NLRA.
Definitely. And on the flip side, if you're a business owner, it's equally important to understand the rights of your employees and to make a good faith effort to accommodate those rights.
So it's about finding common ground, respecting different perspectives, and working together to create a more fair and just workplace.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. We've explored the historical context of Hudgens v. NLRB. We've really dug into the Supreme Court's decision and examined the lasting legacy of this really fascinating case.
It's been a great discussion.
It has, and I hope our listeners have come away with a better understanding of this complex but really important area of the law.
I'm sure they have.
And as always, the conversation doesn't stop here, so keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions, and keep diving deep into the legal issues that shape our world. That's all for this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us.